talk about Stephanie as far as like being like the one of the only like black people, but black women, right, in this field. Cause you know, you've been the only black person probably in a room in undergrad when you went to conferences, graduate school when you went to certain conferences, and now even as a postdoc. How is that life? Is it lonely? Like how do you feel?
I wouldn't say lonely. It is a bit frustrating because I don't know. I feel like when I go into these conferences, since I've been here, I've had to attend conferences. And I mean, some of them, I've been in a few where not only have I been the only black person, I've been the only woman. So being a double minority, it's like, okay, I really have to prove myself. And that gets a little frustrating. And sometimes it can feel defeating because you feel like people aren't hearing you. But you know, I just try to make the most of it. And I feel like I try to make myself come across, you know, pleasant and intelligent so that people know that when they interact with women, when they interact with black people, and when they interact with black women, that we really bring it and we know what we're talking about.
What's up, everybody? It's the Don't Be Scared podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. J. This podcast is all about STEM education, all right? And once again, STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. So if you're interested in any of these subjects, this is your podcast. Now, specifically during this podcast, we're going to be talking about careers, education, and any trends that we see happening in STEM education right now. What's up, everybody? So this is Dr. J coming to you back again with another episode on the podcast. And today we got a very special guest. We have Dr. Stephanie Vaughn. Let's give it up for Stephanie Vaughn, everybody. Let's give it up for you. So, Stephanie, she is a, first off, she's a great person, first off. But second, she works actually at the Naval Research Lab. So she's working for the government, everybody. She works for the government. Enough with me. Stephanie, how you feel? How you feel today?
I feel good. I'm a little nervous.
No. Don't be nervous. I just want to appreciate you doing this because everybody is wondering about, you know, STEM world. And here at Don't Be Scared, we're really just trying to push and expose people to STEM, especially in our communities. You know, we're just really trying to get that out there because the world's moving towards STEM and we don't want to be left behind at all. So,
yeah,
definitely feel that. So let's just start off with a little background, right? So when you grew up, were you like interested in STEM at all, or like how did you get involved in STEM?
You know, I don't really know. My family asks me that all the time because I could care less about like sciences in general when I was growing up. But I think it's when I got to high school, I had like this really awesome chemistry teacher. Like she was like the typical nerd, and she was very into everything. And like some of my classmates couldn't stand her because she was so strict, you know, but she made chemistry really cool to me. So I was like, oh, this is kind of dope. Like, all right, cool. Then I ended up taking physics, and I really liked my physics teacher too. Like he was just so passionate about it that it was like, wow, like he made it really cool. You know what I mean? He made it very interesting. So when I went to go to college, I was like, well, I don't really know what I want to do, but I kind of want to be a dentist. And to be a dentist, to go to dental school, you got to major in a science. So
Yeah, true.
I picked biology and I was really bad at it. So then I changed my major to chemistry and I was good at it. I just stayed. So, I mean, yeah, I don't have that good story of like, I've loved it since I was a kid. I had chemistry in it. I don't have that. Not at all.
And, you know, nothing's wrong with that because it was something that you realized later on in your life. Like, you know, you actually end up enjoying it. And just that little exposure to where you had that one person, right, who like kind of invested in you. You know what I'm saying? So, and it kind of worked out in your favor because, you know, now you rolled on into this career that, you know, you probably didn't expect at all, but I mean, guys, she's been killing it. She's killed it. So you mentioned, right, when you went to your undergrad, can you tell the people where you got your undergrad degree at?
I went to Xavier University of Louisiana. It's an HBCU.
Okay, shout out to all the HBCUs out there, everybody. You go to HBCU. So can you just describe the experience at HBCU? Because I really just want to make sure everybody understands, like, you can get a great experience at HBCU. So how was your experience at Xavier?
It was great. It was something that I needed, that was missing in my life, that I didn't know was missing until I went there. Xavier's a little bit smaller. It's a Catholic institution, so it's different than other HBCUs, but it still is like that love, that sense of family. Like, I really feel like if I went to a PWI, I wouldn't have been able to make it in grad school, because they just really instilled in you, like, you can do this. Like, have this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so real fast, explain to everybody what a PWI is. Because, you know, there might be something PWI, what's PWI? What is that? All these acronyms. What's a PWI?
A predominantly white institution.
Okay.
Which is where I went to grad school.
Okay. And all right, so PWI, predominantly white institution. So we're looking at majority white school. HBCU, we know, is historically black college university. So more black people here and then less black people here. How was that, right, experience, like, when you left HBCU? Because I went to HBCU, everybody, and I was shocked, you know, low-key, when I went back to a predominantly white institution. So how was your experience going back, in this case, to a PWI?
It was shocking. The same thing. I experienced some racism from professors my first year when I started at the PWI, which I wasn't used to, because even though I went to a HBCU, all my professors were not black. Like, I had lots of white professors, but they were there. They cared about you as a student. They didn't care what, you know, what our race was. But when I went to my PWI, it was totally different. The culture was different. It didn't feel like people, the professors, the students, it didn't feel like a family, like they supported you or were trying to instill this confidence in you. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely a smack in the face into reality.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like HBCUs kind of give us this type of world to where, you know, it doesn't even seem real, you know, thinking about it, because you're in an environment that is like unseen, to where you're around a whole bunch of educated black folks. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's kind of anomaly, to where it just, like, it doesn't kind of exist. You can't believe it. And then when you leave, right, now everything is just, okay, now we're back in the real world. At least in the United States, I should say.
Right.
So definitely a shell shock of experience, right, comparing PWI to HBCU. So while you were at grad school, how was your experience, like, in chemistry related? So can you tell the people what you did as far as research goes?
So I'm an analytical chemist, and I did my dissertation work using a quartz crystal microbalance, or QCM, and I developed sensor arrays to detect volatile organic compounds. Really, I exposed some sensors to different vapors, and then I went and did some math with it and figured out how they could discriminate between these gases, you know, between these different vapors. But I definitely enjoyed, like, what I learned in grad school. It was harder to find, like, my community there and, like, my sense of family. And thankfully, I had a great advisor. Otherwise, I mean, I might not have made it out, you know, like, that support system is really important in grad school, for sure.
Yeah. And I would say, definitely, you know, people overlook this. You know, people are always so focused on, well, when I get to grad school, I want to do this certain thing, or it's like, I only want to do this type of you know, chemistry, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I feel like the probably the most important thing that's really going to really set your career is your advisor. So I feel like everybody, if you're in grad school right now, understand your advisor, because your advisor is going to decide what projects you do. Not only that, but they're going to decide when you graduate or if you even graduate. You know, your advisor has a lot of control that people don't really relate to until like you're really into your research, when you're thinking about, oh, I'm ready to go. You know what I'm saying? But your advisor comes to you, it's like, nah, you got 5 more years. All right, been here for you. So
really,
so it's like, everybody, please, please, please pay attention to who your advisor is and all that, because it's key. And can you tell the people, like, with your advisor, how was your advisor a great advisor in your mind? What made your advisor
so great? I mean, I had a lot of you know, obstacles to overcome in grad school, and he was just his type of, like, his styling of being an advisor was different for each student, and so it was very tailored to each person. And so he gave me the type of tough love that I needed, you know, and but he also was there to support me. So, like, I didn't finish my CUMS in time, and I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna get kicked out the program. And he was like, no, because you're really good at research. So what we're gonna do is we are going to write a letter. Like, we're gonna petition for you to stay. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. He just was always constantly fighting for me, you know, and he, I think that I'm a very confident person in life in general, but when it came to, like, science and doing research, I was not confident at all. But he really helped to, like, build that confidence in me and, like, help me see what he saw in me, you know?
Yeah. And I definitely agree with that, because, you know, every advisor is different how they handle you. Especially how you got to make sure they got your back. Even how you mentioned your situation with the CUMS, real fast, tell the people what CUMS are, because certain grad schools have different requirements. And a CUM in this case, what is that? What's a CUM?
The cumulative exam that is given out in each area of, you know, chemistry, and you have to pass 6 in 2 years, and I did not. I'm not a great test taker. But it's really hard to prepare for them, because it could be on anything. They give you 2 weeks, they drop a topic, and they're like, okay, here, study for this. But this is the thing. There's no, like, strict guideline on how they grade you in these CUMS. Like, if they want only 50% of all the people who took the CUM to pass, that's what they could do. If they want the passing grade to be, you know, 50%, you know, you get an F, you can do that. So I don't like them, moral of the story. I don't think that they're beneficial in determining how someone's going to do in grad school.
Yeah, and I completely agree. You know, something that I really hate standardized tests, and I feel like, you know, they're really just bringing another standardized test to graduate school. Unfortunately, you know, once you guys get there, that type of stuff really doesn't matter, because how are you going to graduate? Through your research, your dissertation. So the CUMS, I feel like, is just another way, another barrier, right, for people. You know, who's not necessarily good test takers, but, you know, it's low-key a barrier for underrepresented, you know, communities, because, you know, the results show standardized tests don't work. So I don't really know why certain institutions continue to do these standardized tests in school. It's kind of a waste of time, but that's just me. That's just me.
I agree. 100% agree.
Yeah, man, it's really crazy. It's frustrating. Hopefully within the next 10 to 20 years, hopefully it changes. But
fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed. So right now, right, Stephanie, so you're in grad school, right? And can you talk about that transition to actually, how did you even end up in your position now, right? Being in the Naval Research Lab, okay? How did you even get there?
You know, that was really weird, honestly. Ashley got, she was on like, I don't know, some type of group message, and someone posted like a page from LinkedIn and was like, hey, somebody's looking for a postdoc that does vapor sensing. And Ashley was like, hey, you might be interested in this since you do vapor sensing. I was like, all right, cool. So she sent it to me. I go look at this lady, all her, like what she does. And I was like, wow, this aligns so well with what I'm currently doing, you know? And so I emailed her and she set up a phone interview for us. We talked about the research that she did and then all the research that I had been doing. And she was like, you sound like a great fit. Like, I'd like for you to come out for an interview. Came out for the interview, gave him a presentation. She was like, I love you. I think you are a perfect fit. Like, you know what you're talking about. The job is yours. Like, you just have to fill out. So like the postdoc that I'm at, I had to actually like apply for a fellowship. So I had to write a proposal and get approved from that, you know? So I had to do that. She was like, as long as you can do this and write this proposal and get this funding, like this position is yours. And so I went and did that. And yeah, now I'm here. So I didn't really actually look for a lot of jobs.
And that's a great thing, because it's like a connections is key, you know. So that's like you had a connection and it worked out in your favor. Of course, you're very qualified because you still had to apply at the end of the day. So it wasn't like it was just given to you. You still had to apply. And with the proposal for the fellowship, what exactly is a fellowship? Can you explain that?
So it is basically like a scholarship, but it's a lot more money. And you have to do more things to get the fellowship than you would for a scholarship. I had a fellowship in grad school too. And there were just more requirements that I had to fulfill in order to get the stipend. So they give you a stipend, and that's the same thing here, is that my job, the Naval Research Lab, doesn't actually pay me. My fellowship does. So I'm considered a guest scientist at the Naval Research Lab.
Okay. So at the lab, is there like a variety of like guests in the lab, or do they have people there? How does that work? Like once you get to like government research labs, like what is that even like?
Oh man. So this one, it's like, it feels like it's super top secret, but it's really not. Like, it's very intense when you come to the, like when you drive into the Naval Research Lab, they have like guards with guns, like these big guns, and they're like waiting, and you have to have like a special card to get in. So you have to pass like all the security check. Like they do a security clearance. So after you apply for the fellowship, they say like, okay, yeah, you got it. But the position is not yours until you pass the security clearance. So if you owe a lot of money, like if you're super in debt, they'll take that into consideration, because they're like, well, we think you might let somebody pay you off from a foreign government. So we don't know if we can actually trust you. Whoa. That goes into play. Yeah. Into your security clearance. Yeah. They look at who your family is, who your friends are, you know, and it's kind of intense and kind of scary. So, but once you get that, they give you this card. It's called a CAC. And you have to like scan that every time I go in. It's my badge. They scan it to make sure that I'm allowed to be there. And then once I get there, it's like, it's kind of big. It's a bunch of buildings. Like, I think it's like 200 buildings or something. And each building is something different. And I'm in the chemistry building, and one of the chemistry buildings. And once I get there, I kind of don't interact with a lot of other people. There's not a lot of guest scientists, because it's such a hassle to get visitors to come in. So I actually can't ever show my lab to anybody, because it's top secret. It's government. So I'm not allowed to take pictures while I'm in the lab. Yeah, it's a little intense. My work computer does not have a camera on it, because we're just not really supposed to do stuff like that when we're in the lab, because it could give away our location and stuff like that. But there are other postdocs who are considered guest scientist, you know?
Yeah. So, it sounds very top secret, man. I mean, even though it's not, it's like, y'all ain't doing background checks. I don't know if I can.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, but that's really cool that you're in that whole world. And I guess being in the Naval Research Lab, like what type of research are you even doing in there?
So I work on three different projects at the moment. The first project that I started working on when I came in was not the project I wrote my proposal on. So the project I wrote my proposal on was to, there are dogs that can detect oil spills, right? And so we want to know how the dogs can detect the oil spills. Like, what are they smelling to actually be able to detect this? So part of my proposal was to figure out what is in crude oil and like what composes that headspace. And then we can apply that to figure out what dogs actually smell. So, but when I started, that's not what we hadn't gotten the funding for that yet. So I started working on a fentanyl project, and in that we're trying to develop a non-contact detection method for fentanyl because it's super deadly. You don't want to touch it. You don't want to inhale it. You kind of want to just stay away from it. So we had to actually first figure out what is in the headspace of solid fentanyl. So we figured out like the vapor signature. I published a paper on that. Yay me. which is really cool. And then the next step was to actually figure out if there are any target analytes that are in that vapor signature that we can use. And I'm actually submitting revisions on a paper for that. So hopefully that will be published very soon. And then my colleague, Ashley, is actually working on the non-contact detection method. So we actually have like an instrument that is handheld and we can go around and detect samples with it. And figure out, you know, if this will actually work in the field to help people, help, you know, first responders and things of that nature. And then, like I said, the second project I work on is the oil spill with the canines. And then another project I'm working on is actually trying to detect old landmines and seeing how long you can detect them. So, you know, from the wars, there's still landmines that are buried. And so we want to see if we can go back and find them, but we have to figure out, you know, how long would the vapors take to dissipate out?
Mm-hmm. So there's old landmines buried right now to where if I went to that place and stepped on it, could I potentially die still? Is that?
No, they're like inactive, but they want to be able to remove all of them, you know, and then they want to be able to figure out, you know, like in the future, if we were to have a war again, hey, if we go and bury these, how deep can we bury these in order for us to remove them, find them, and get rid of them? So that project is kind of cool, but I'm just getting started on that, really. And honestly, I'm not actually doing the research on that. I'm developing, like I'm designing the experiments for it, and a grad student is actually going to do the legit experiments for that.
Okay, so designing experiments and all that. So how is just your work like different, right? You're on three projects right now. How is it different from even when you were in grad school? Is there still overlap, or is it like way more work, or is it harder? Like, how was that experience for you?
When I transitioned in, it was a little overwhelming because I went from working with the QCM to working with the GC. Never worked on a GC in my life. So I had, that was like a really big, you know, transition. But once I started working GC, with it, go ahead.
Tell everybody GC real fast, just in case they don't know.
Oh, gas chromatography. And so that was, I mean, using it is not hard, but I just had never done it. I didn't know what I was doing. So that was a little bit overwhelming. But once I got that, you know, it's really not that hard. It's a lot easier than grad school, to be honest. I mean, I work my 8 hours a day, and since I work for the government, it's like, well, we're not paying you overtime, so turn your computer off and you got to go because we only paying you for 40 hours.
Yeah.
So that's really nice. So it is, I feel like I have a lot more free time. And even though I'm working on three different projects, it's, I don't know, it's still not overly time consuming because it's, you know, I kind of just space it out. Like, okay, this is, you know, this day will be for this. They'll be for that type of things. But it's definitely, to me, less stressful than being in grad school.
Yeah. So it seems like you have a lot of freedom, right, to move your schedule how you really want to do it, right? So, and I feel like that's another thing people forget the benefit of and STEM, right? Because there's a lot of freedom to do many things. And especially if you get funding behind it, it's like you're free to do it in your way, right? And a lot of places you don't have that freedom. So that's one thing I definitely love about STEM, particular research and chemistry, is just that freedom aspect, just as you mentioned. So you mentioned 8 to 5 is your day. Would you say you got a good work-life balance, or are you carrying your work over the weekend, or how's that working for you?
Oh, my work-life balance is great. I don't do work on the weekend. I do not. Unless it's something that I really, really want to work on. So like right now I have revisions for this paper that I need to submit. And so I'm waiting for one of the co-authors to look at, you know, like just agree or disagree with, you know, my reviewer responses. And if that comes on Saturday, then I'm probably going to submit it because I just want to, because I really want this paper to be published. But outside of that, I don't work on the weekend. Not at all.
No. Okay. All right. No, that's good. I'm glad that you don't. I mean, geez, I didn't know you was going to be stressed out every weekend, like dying, going hard or what, but your work-life balance is just so key. So I definitely understand that. So in your lab, like right now, who is all in your lab? I know you can't say names, but like, what is the makeup of your research lab?
So my research lab is myself, another postdoc, a lab tech, and then my PI. She now left to go to a new position. So now my lab group is just myself, another postdoc, and my lab tech, and we're all under someone different that is technically our PI.
Gotcha. PI. Yeah, that's a PI.
Primary investigator.
There we go. Private investigator. Okay, yeah. So they're basically right over you in a way because they're like leading the projects, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, bet. And then since you guys are PI, you guys are the postdoc, and then what is a lab tech? What exactly is the lab tech?
So our lab tech is different than a lot of other lab techs. Okay. He's really intelligent. He just can't move up and do other things. He's not allowed to have certain titles because he only got his bachelor's. So since he didn't go to grad school and get a master's or a PhD, he's only limited to, like, he's basically only allowed to do what we tell him to do. Like, if I need him to fix my instrument, then he needs to go fix my instrument. But I don't do that to him because he's, like, super intelligent. He's been there for, like, I don't know, 11 years or something. And he's really awesome. I really wish he had went to grad school because he's very bright, but he didn't. So he's kind of just stuck where he's at.
Mm. So is that a difference? Because I noticed that in academia, to where, you know, people without advanced degrees and people who don't, you know, like there's a little difference, pay gap difference, but also even how their positions. Is that the same way in research labs or is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, for sure. It's the same. Now, I don't know exactly. So we're paid on that GS scale, which please don't ask me to define GS because I really don't know. It's something with the government. But I don't know what he gets paid, but I know that there is a cap of what he can get paid. Like there's no way he can ever move up to be, you know, a senior scientist there. Yeah. So it stops him, you know, there's a ceiling that he hits and he can't go over it.
Okay, so there's a difference in that. And then I guess, have you noticed a difference like community-wise? Because, you know, you mentioned, you know, community is big, I could tell to you. So at HBCU in your undergrad, you had a community there. And then now you're in postdoc. Do you have the same similar experience or is it not necessarily the same?
I've not found my community yet, which is not necessarily because, you know, the Naval Research Lab is bad. It's I moved here. I started right before the pandemic happened. So I didn't even really get to meet a lot of the people that work in the building with me. Yeah. Like right now, we're not at 100% occupancy. We're only at 50%. So only 50% of us are allowed that work in that building are allowed in that building. So yeah. I work kind of on like a schedule. So that way everybody who needs to do research can get into the building to do their research. So there are still people in the building that I have yet to meet because we just don't work there on the same days. So I don't feel like I've really made my community, but I like the group that I'm in and I feel like I can go to them and they respect me. And it wasn't a complete culture shock like when I went to grad school. Yeah. The only downfall is that I don't see a lot of Black people whatsoever in my building in general. And I don't know, I can't say that that's because they don't recruit there, like they don't recruit us. I think that that is because we haven't gotten enough Black people in STEM yet. You know what I mean? There's a lot of old people that work at NRL. And so we're trying to get us in there. Yeah. So I think in the years to come, there will be more because I was surprised to find out that NRL actually does an internship over the summer for HBCUs. So I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I had no idea. So they are trying to get it out and get us to come there. It's just there's a lot of old people there still. We're not there yet. But we will be. I have faith that we will be there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely going to happen. So talk about Stephanie as far as like being like one of the only like Black people, but Black women, right, in this field. Because, you know, you've been the only Black person probably in a room in undergrad when you went to conferences, graduate school when you went to certain conferences, and now even as a postdoc. How is that life? Is it lonely? Like, how do you feel?
I wouldn't say lonely. It is a bit frustrating because I don't know. I feel like when I go into these conferences, since I've been here, I've had to attend conferences. And I mean, some of them, I've been in a few where not only have I been the only Black person, I've been the only woman. So being a double minority, it's like, okay, I really have to prove myself. And that gets a little frustrating. And sometimes it can feel defeating because you feel like people aren't hearing you. But you know, I just try to make the most of it. And I feel like I try to make myself come across, you know, pleasant and intelligent so that people know that when they interact with women, when they interact with Black people, and when they interact with Black women, that we really bring it and we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can definitely tell everybody, I agree. She has definitely killed it. Every presentation I ever seen her at, she just killed it. I don't know. It's like, I'll be like, dang, I'm glad I got to go to her. Shoot. It's like, for real. Like,
thank you.
It's real. I always feel like, you know, and I don't know if that's a thing that I'm just noticing, but like, I was exposed to many, many Black women in grad school in this field. And you was one of them, right? Because there was a community, Nobuche, basically. And just Black women in STEM are just killing it. And maybe that's the aspect that, as you said, being the only double minority in the room, right, to where not only are you the only Black person, but you're the only woman in a room full of probably white males in this industry. So, no, definitely true with that being said. So real fast, can you talk about Nobuche? Because you kind of brought me along into Nobuche. I had no idea what Nobuche was. I never heard of it. It was like a huge organization, the National Organization for Black Chemists and Engineers. So can you talk about Nobuche just for the people that don't know? Because if you have Nobuche as your university, get involved with Nobuche first off. But yeah, how was your experience with all that?
Oh, man, it was really good. I mean, We had a Nova Shea chapter at Xavier, but I didn't participate in it because, like I said, I had my mindset on being a dentist. So I was like, I don't need to participate in chemistry related stuff. And then, you know, last minute I decided I don't want to do that. So I went to grad school. And when my first year, one of the senior students was like, hey, what are you doing today? And I was like, nothing, going home. And they were like, yeah, no, you're going to come to a Nova Shea meeting. And I was like, all right, cool. So I went, and you know, I liked that they tried to talk about, they wanted to try to make this a community. Like, hey, there's not a lot of us here, but we're going to be here for each other. And there's a national chapter. Like, this is our chapter, you know, the grad chapter, but there's a national chapter, and we go and present, and it's very helpful to, you know, present your research to people that look like you, because they've had experiences that you haven't yet to experience, you know, and they can give you guidance and stuff like that. So I wasn't on the board my first year, but after that I joined because I was like, wow, I really like this because they really looked out for you, you know, like even though we weren't, I wouldn't say that I was friends with everybody that was in Nova Shea, but it was still that like sense of community, like I'm going to look out for you and we're going to take care of each other. And yeah. So I wanted to continue to do that. So I stayed on Nova Shea like all the way until I graduated because I really liked what we were doing for Black people, Black chemists in, you know, in grad school. It was really helpful to me.
Yeah. And I could say the same thing because Nova Shea being part of that community kind of like pushed me just to do better. You know, even my first semester, I was struggling my first semester. And I remember having a conversation with you and, you know, just having that conversation just helped me out because, I was struggling. I had to take classes at my mid-semester. I had straight up all, I had D's and L's. People was like, oh, you're probably going to be kicked out. But, you know, I pulled it around. And, you know, it worked out. But that's what I'm saying, like that sense of community to where you have somebody, just comfortable, able to talk about the different things and just figure out which way is the best way to go. So definitely, if you guys have a Nova Shea chapter, check that out at your university, at your undergrad, et cetera. And with you, Stephanie, like, you know, you're always on point with everything you do with your presentation and research. I'm just curious, do you have like anybody that actually inspired you in this field, or is this something that you just naturally happened or anything like that?
I feel really bad saying this, but no, I don't really have anybody that had inspired me. I mean, I got into chemistry because, like I said, I wanted to be a dentist. Then I went and shadowed a dentist my senior year in undergrad. And I was like, ooh, this is not for me. I don't want to do this. And I went and talked to my advisor. And I was like, what do I do? Like, I'm about to graduate and this is not what I want to do. Like, what do I do with the chemistry degree? And she was like, oh, you go to grad school. And I was like, for what? Like, I don't want to teach. And she was like, that's not the only thing you can do with a PhD. And I was like, what? Well, what can you do? Like, what do you do with it? I thought you could just teach. So she told me like, just apply, you know, and if you don't want it, if you decide you don't want your PhD, then just leave with a master's. So I was like, all right, cool. So I thought about like, when I applied to grad school, I thought about the different classes, the different chemistry classes that I took. And I was like, which one was my favorite one? I really liked analytical chemistry. So I was like, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go to grad school and I'm gonna be an analytical chemist and I'm gonna figure out what I wanna do from there. Mm-hmm. So get to grad school, have no idea what I'm going to work on, like what project I'm gonna work on, whose group I'm gonna be in. Like I had no idea. So a project was given to me and I really liked it. And so I just kept going with it. And I really like research. So it's not even that I do the same thing now that I did in grad school. It's just, I really like doing research and answering questions. And, you know, you get into the lab, you do something, you're like, dang, this didn't work. Well, what can I do to fix it? You know? And so that's really what I like about it. So yeah, I don't really think anybody had inspired me. Now I do have mentors that have helped to drive me, you know, but I don't think anybody I looked at them and was like, I want to do what they do. Like I want to be a chemist because they are killing it, you know?
Yeah. And that makes sense. I could say the same thing myself. I actually didn't have nobody, not necessarily a chemist, that inspired me to go this route either. So I definitely can relate to that. However, I was a little bit different because you chose analytical chemistry. Now, analytical chemistry, guys, it sounds, you're analyzing things, but is it more than that? Or what exactly? Because my background, everybody, was in inorganic chemistry. And Stephanie, you have a background in analytical. So what exactly is analytical chemistry?
I don't really touch chemicals that often. No, everybody's a little different in analytical chemistry, but it's more so we're not making things. Like, that's not what we're concerned about. We're concerned about applications and what's going to happen. So, okay, I made these sensor arrays, but what are they good for? What can we do with them? And so, like, for me, my analytical, like, background really was, okay, I took this quartz crystal microbalance and I used it in a different way to analyze these vapors. And then I had to go and do a bunch of math. Mind you, my background is not in math, but a lot of analytical chemists are analyzing things. And so we have to learn all these different, you know, statistical techniques so that we can figure out what is going on, you know? So, for instance, like, you as an inorganic chemist, you could make something and then you could come bring it to me and I would essentially analyze it or be like, oh, hey, I could do this with this, or let me apply this test and figure out what's going on.
Exactly. Because I stayed away from instruments. Everybody, I was just using NMR and GC and that's it. I was like, hey, I ain't trying to do all this. But that's the thing about chemistry. It's so much collaboration. Where it's like you have a person who makes it, then you send that out to somebody who can analyze it, right? And then it's just back and forth, a collaboration constantly going on. So that's the thing that I love about it, is that you're just able to do so much with the different collaborations. One quick question, Stephanie, and this is something that I always want to ask to the guests. Do you have a moment to where you can say, right, you wasn't scared, to where it's like you had, it's like you in your mind was like, okay, don't be scared, right? And then you chose to be brave in that moment to where you had to just go out there and do it. Do you have a moment in your STEM career where you had that?
All of grad school? No, I mean, yeah, honestly, I think it was, I haven't had any of these moments since I've been a postdoc yet, and I say yes, because I know it's going to happen. Like, there's always going to be a moment where you have to be like, all right, put your big girl panties on, because you just got to do this. But I think maybe in grad school, I don't know, there were a lot of times I had to, like, be like, you can't be scared, like, you gotta do this, like, it's make or break, you know.
Grad school, I definitely agree, because I feel like in grad school it's like every level, right, to where it's like you have a moment to where when you first get there going through classes, and that's a shock to everybody, because if you take any grad level type of course, it's a whole different level to undergrad courses. So that's a moment, even with your general exam, just trying to make sure you can stay in the program, to now after that with your defending your dissertation. So that whole thing, you know, I definitely agree, is that moment, that whole tenure of this time, right, to where you have to be brave. So I definitely see that as a thing.
Yeah. I can't. I'm sorry. I can't pinpoint an exact moment.
And Stephanie, do you have any advice to, like, the next person who's interested in STEM? Like, if you could go back at 18, you or like a cousin of yourself in the same situation, what advice would you give them who's interested in going your route? Right. What advice could you give them?
Don't let imposter syndrome consume you, because imposter syndrome is real. And I mean, it made me want to leave grad school a couple of times. I mean, I wanted to drop out quite a few times because of imposter syndrome. And so I think that would be my biggest advice is like, what if you start feeling like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here, or oh, I'm not good at this, or oh, I can't do this. That's not really you. That's the imposter syndrome. And you need to see that and address it and get rid of it, because it's a joke. Like, if you weren't supposed to be there, you wouldn't be there. They wouldn't have picked your application. They wouldn't have asked you to do anything. Like, you wouldn't be there. So I think that would be my biggest advice is like, just don't let imposter syndrome consume you, because it's real and it can. And we lose a lot of good people, a lot of good Black scientists behind that, because they don't realize it. They think that it's true, you know?
Yeah. And that's just facts, everybody. Imposter syndrome is definitely, just as Stephanie said, do not let it consume you, because it can really take over your life. And then all you're thinking about is, are you worthy to be in your position? Well, you are worthy, because you wouldn't have got there in the first place. So that's the first thought, guys. If you have that thought, think of that thought. All right. You got there. So someone saw something in you. Okay. It's not off a fluke. All right. There ain't no flukes in this world. All right. So right. I definitely agree. And Stephanie, what is your, what's the aspiration you have after you're done with your postdoc? Where you want to go from there? What are you trying to do after that?
So I actually want to stay here. Okay. I actually want to stay at NRL and hopefully get hired in as what they call a Fed. It just means I'm actually a federal employee, because right now I'm technically not. But I really like the freedom that I have here, as long as essentially the research that I get to work on is whatever I can get funding for. You know, as long as I can write a proposal and get funding for it, I can work on that. Mm-hmm. So I just really like the freedom that I can do here. And so I kind of want to stay. I mean, I know that maybe I should go and see other things, but I really like it here. So kind of want to just ride the wave and, you know, hopefully it works out.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I definitely see that working out for you. Cause you're just a boss. You're a boss at the end of the day. any last words for the audience, Stephanie? Any last things you just want to tell the people out there, promote anything that you would like?
Well, one, I want to say thank you for having me. This was really cool. I'm really glad that you're doing this. I remember when you started it in grad school, and I think it's really awesome, because we do need people. We need to see people that look like us to know that this is a thing. You know what I mean? And you bringing people on here and asking all these questions, it's really helpful, because again, like I said, I had no idea what a PhD was. And then I had no idea what you could do with a PhD. So I think this is really awesome. Any last words that I would have for people? I think it would be, if you are serious about going to grad school, or if you are in grad school, that, like we said earlier, really think about your advisor. It's a marriage. So like, you think it's a joke, but no, seriously, you are married to this person, because even after you graduate, you still need things from them. You may need a recommendation letter. You need all types of things from them. Like, this is not a, oh, I just have to be with them for 5 years. No, you don't. You're married to them. It goes with you for the rest of your career. So choose wisely, because it's definitely important.
Yeah. And I definitely agree, everybody. I'm still talking about it. Just last week. So everybody, I just want to say, give it up for Dr. Stephanie Vaughn. And this is Don't Be Scared Podcast. Now, once again, you want to make sure that you hit that subscribe button and follow us for the latest episodes on our podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to leave a review, as well as comment below what you want to hear us talk about next. At the end of the day, everybody, we're just here to help. We want to spread our vision of increasing STEM participation from underrepresented communities